You're listening to The Comedy Cellar, live from the table on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Comedy Cellar Show here on Sirius XM Channel 99, The Comedy Channel. My name is Noam Dworman. I'm the owner of The Comedy Cellar. We're not in our normal location today. We're upstairs in the apartment building because The Comedy Cellar is being taken over by the shooting of the TV show Crashing, starring Dan Natterman.
Well, that's a strong word to describe a line here and there.
I'm resentful to them. They took out my line, so I hate them.
So also have Mr. Dan Natterman, Matteo Lane, and Mr. Gary Goldman. Go ahead.
I had a line last summer on Crashing, on HBO's Crashing.
Well, I'm shooting tomorrow, an episode tomorrow, and I was all excited to, you know, to be chosen, selected after a rigorous casting process. I look at the call sheet to see who else is going to be on the show outside Steve.
All right.
I mean, in other words, they're taking everybody
except me.
Except Matteo. But I'm never like a future. Outside Steve, by the way, he's just the guy that works outside. He's the doorman here at the comedy.
Yeah,
show.
He's also the best man at my wedding.
He's not an actor or anything.
I've always been convinced that certain TV series, and this is a sick paranoia, certain TV series were created just to keep me off them.
That would be paranoid, but not altogether outrageous a supposition. I've had similar thoughts about conspiracies involving destroying me in this business.
So let me tell you what I'm doing while you guys are talking.
Yeah.
So I'm so obsessed with this new club in Vegas.
Yeah. No, constantly is checking the reservations for the club in Vegas.
Well, it's not just that. I set up one of those online chat things on the internet, like tech support
vault
chat thing. And because I got to see what's going on with the customers, you know? So every time a customer comes to the website and wants to chat, you're going to hear the sound of a cow.
Oh, okay.
And then I'm going to check out. I have to answer their questions like, who's playing tonight? What's on the menu? Have any discount codes?
But hopefully
this is normal. Bugsy Siegel used to do that with the flamingo. He would answer the phone. He would answer the phone with all the questions about the flamingo in 1956.
I recommend the nachos, by the way. They're very good.
Oh, so you did. Listen, but this is the way a business is built, one customer at a time. And it's like the blueberries. I always have sympathy for De Niro in Casino with
Ace Rothstein, the kikiest portrayal of many kiki portrayals in Martin Scorsese films. Ace Rothstein.
Yeah, but he's right. There should be. Why should one guy have all the blueberries? The other guy has no blueberries.
No, he's right. But it also led to ulcers that he needed like 16 Alka-Seltzers an hour to get through.
Well, that's me.
Yeah, well, that's sad.
So and because otherwise we're just gonna go broke in Vegas. So that's what I got to do. So
but things are moving along. You said they're moving along.
Well, we lowered. I'll tell you the problem is Ticketmaster.
Oh.
This fucking racket, Ticketmaster. They charge $14 a ticket. You have no choice. You have to use them. And they're like I don't know, they're my biggest competition. I'm competing with myself because people go to the cart, they buy the ticket, they select the tickets, and then they see the fees and they
is Ticketmaster a monopoly?
Well, I don't know, but they have deals with the major casino organizations.
Oh. Yeah, they've monopolized Las Vegas.
They just bail when they see the fees. I don't know if the MGM organization uses them, but Caesar's
aren't people buying directly on the Comedy Cellar website too?
It all goes through.
It all has to go through Ticketmaster.
It all has to go through Ticketmaster. I'm not even sure if I'm supposed to talk about it on the radio.
Can you buy tickets at the door?
Nope.
Wow.
Really?
A racket.
You can't walk up to the door and buy tickets.
They replaced the mob. The mob never took $14 a ticket, Gary.
Well, you could theoretically. Well, what do you mean you have to go through Ticketmaster? You could theoretically establish your own ticketing system?
No, I can't. It's in the contract.
That's with the Rio.
The Rio is a Ticketmaster house.
Okay.
I think all the Caesars Hotel.
Ticketmaster house.
Which is fine if you're buying a ticket to Elton John for $200. You don't care about the $14.
Right.
When you're buying a ticket for Matteo Lane, $14 is... No, I'm kidding.
All seven people who saw me, and by seven, none. They no.
No,
I had some fans. A bunch of gays came out.
Really?
Yeah, of course. Gays, they always show up.
So this was the thing, but attendance has been better
increasing
and better.
Increasing steadily. I think you have somebody we had inquiring about the chicken.
We had
fingers.
As many paid tickets last Saturday night as we did in the Comedy Cellar in New York. So,
oh, wow.
That's terrific. Yeah,
per show. So that's pretty good. Oh, somebody sent me, are you there? Do you have drink minimum addition to quote? Hi. Do shows usually sell us by? Are you there? Okay, you guys talk.
Wait,
no.
I wanted to.
No, okay, I'll tell him. I'll write it.
Liza's opening at the Cellar in Vegas.
Liza, what do you think of this? Did that go on when you were playing at the Caesar's Palace?
I just remember being really dizzy. I remember Bob Fosse coming saying, "You've got to get on." And I just sort of my hoofer.
What was it like working with Dudley Moore?
He was a faggot.
Oh, really?
But I think, yeah. Can you imagine?
I didn't know that.
Just... Gary, I wanted to welcome you back. You've been away.
Yes.
Can we talk briefly about that?
Yes, absolutely.
Gary moved. He was living in New York, and he was a Comedy Cellar regular. Then he went to live in Boston for
actually,
about a
year. Peabody, Massachusetts. 11 months, I moved back in with my mom.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
Yes.
And can we discuss the reason for that?
Yeah, I went crazy.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't go crazy. I wasn't mumbling to myself or anything like that.
It wasn't a psychotic break.
I had what, in the 70s, what they would have called the breakdown, and I just was...
It wasn't a psychotic break.
No,
it was not a psychotic
break, but I was hospitalized with depression and crippling anxiety, and then I just... I didn't think I was going to be able to continue to do comedy. So I wanted to move back home and reorganize my life and maybe go back to school to become a teacher or something. So I worked at a camp over the mm-hmm. summer as a day camp for adolescents with mm-hmm. Asperger's and then I slowly started to do comedy again last summer. So,
but it's now, I
had no idea.
Yeah,
I read your tweets and you know I'm on your social media feed and. Sounds like you're back with a vengeance because I see a lot of dates that you're plugging, a lot of comedy that you've been doing.
Yeah, I've returned with a fervor because it's brought me great joy since probably like October. I've felt more myself and more every day.
Now, but you said you didn't think that you could continue. Your thought was that maybe you couldn't continue to do comedy,
right.
But that you could be a teacher.
Yes.
In other words. You felt if you can't do comedy, you felt you could do teaching. Why is that? What's the
I had
comedy's too anxiety provoking?
I had substitute taught in the
what subject?
90s. Everything. I was a building substitute, so I would cover whoever was absent, and like sometimes somebody would be absent for a long time, and so like a gym class I covered for a long time, and I covered a history class for a while and an English class, and.
What age group?
It was a high school.
Oh, they're all so shitty. Everything past 5th grade is just awful.
But these kids were actually a delight.
But so you felt that you felt that comedy was too anxiety provoking, but teaching kids was not.
Yeah, and I didn't think I was ever going to be able to write another joke. My brain wasn't working. My brain wasn't working at all.
We all feel that way. We all get to a point where we feel like we've written our last joke, and that we have nothing more to say.
Do I don't
we
know.
Not?
I'm
Mateo,
pretty,
are you?
No, I'm pretty furious all the time. So,
but do you ever
know.
Feel like you've written your last joke?
No.
Oh.
I'm also been doing it for 6 years,
or a joke writer.
Joke writer. I'm not a storyteller. Okay. Yeah, all I'm right. more like. I actually have like difficulty with stories.
Okay.
I have a problem
telling
stories. Like if I have to tell like a long drawn out story, I get bored with myself and I get anxiety when I don't get the laughs.
Sure.
So I need the laughs. Like and then when I have done like storytelling shows, like you don't have to like get so many laughs. I'm like, yeah, but I'm comfortable with that. I'm comfortable with getting the laughs.
Yeah, of course.
I feel like I need. You know, I've often joked, half joked, that I need to get married or have a kid just to get more jokes. Because I feel like I've talked about everything. I've covered it all.
She married a female comedian. Like, give her some material.
Well, we give each other material. I thought, well, Marina Franklin, who's black, as you know, and our audience may not know, but we've jokingly talked about having a kid together just maybe to get a sitcom deal or at the very least some good gags at it.
Oh, God.
Because to have
just because that hasn't been done before.
Yeah.
People getting married specifically to develop a show business.
As far as we know, it's never been done.
Story. Doesn't mean you couldn't pretend that was the thing within a TV show. You don't actually have to do it.
Yes, but you kind of do because you know how Hollywood works.
Yeah, but that's so psychotic, right?
I think they had Little Ricky just for the plot lines.
Weren't most of the 80s just like ploys sure. to get like more ratings? Like, just, I don't know. They have a small person cousin. Go! Like,
yes, but that was fictitious. I'm talking about doing it for real.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I have to apologize for this messaging.
Well, you have to do it now. You can't. It cannot wait.
I got to find someone else. No, it costs me. I got to find. But that's what I was saying.
You get an intern.
So the whole thing with Gary and his breakdown went by while I was doing it. First of all, I don't want to appear to be flippant about, you know, not listening to it. It's serious.
No, I understand.
But I also am fascinated by this. We had someone on last week, I forget who it was, who also talked about having a kind of a breakdown.
Mariah.
No, it wasn't Mariah.
Okay.
And I...
Ian Finance.
Oh, yeah, Ian, that's right, who's a really funny comedian. But, and I'm wondering, do you know you're in a breakdown when you're having it?
No, I was looking back on a journal that I kept last summer when I moved back home, and I took down notes from a conversation I had with Amy Koppelman, who's
Brian Koppelman's screenwriter's
wife. Right. She's a novelist. I'm dropping names, but she was begging me to go into the hospital and telling me it was life or death, and I remember at the time thinking this is an exaggeration, this is hyperbole, but as I read it actually on the train ride down, I was thinking, oh my gosh, yeah, it took somebody from the outside to recognize what was going on with me. I didn't understand how
it's like
bad
one of
things
those
were. My girlfriend Sade, who lives with me, understood what was going on and described what I was like during that time. She said you would either sleep or cry. There was really nothing in between. And the thing with depression that a lot of people don't know, one of the symptoms that my doctor said it was called, a lot of doctors refer to it as faux dementia, where your memory is just so weak. So I don't even remember a lot of it, and Sade will describe things to me and I have no recall.
Now, so you got new medications, you got some talk therapy. What pulled you out of it, or just the passage of time?
I could list 30 things that I changed in my life, and maybe it was a combination, maybe it was moving, maybe it was the medicine, maybe so I could list
maybe you just
30
came
things
out of
I
it.
Became, yeah, or these things come out. The only thing I will say about maybe you just came out of it was the first severe symptoms of this particular episode of depression, and I've never had one that lasted longer than 8 weeks, came in March of 2015, and it was pretty much unabated for nearly 2 years and 9 months.
Oh wow!
Well, how do we prevent this from happening again?
That's what I was just going to ask. Do you have any like checks or anything in your head? Like, okay, this is a red flag. I'm starting to go back down that road again.
Yeah, yeah, I do. But it's something that
and three
that
cheers
I
for
feel.
Sade for sticking around.
Three cheers. By the way, you look great.
Oh, thanks.
That's the thing that's fucked up about it is like I get like 4 hours of sleep and I look like a horse stomped on me for hours, and like you had a mental breakdown. You look amazing.
Well, I lost 25 pounds. That helps. Losing
That's great.
Is always good. Yeah.
Your skin looks good. Your hair
Thank
looks
you.
Good. You're still tall.
Thank you.
Do I
Thank
need a breakdown to look good? What do I?
Well,
you
Mateo
look good,
is being Mateo is being falsely modest. He looks very good.
Yes.
I just ate penne alla vodka, so I don't feel good. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, what you feel?
I feel like I have to shower. You ever eat so much food? You're like, I should shower. Like McDonald's.
Oh, I guess no, but theoretically, that's whatever.
So I really thought I was going to get a laugh.
So, you know, and I wonder about the thing about getting better, because I've noticed in my own mental ups and downs, which I don't think have gotten to the point of
You're steady Eddie.
No, better. Everybody goes through their periods where they're happy. And I notice that I find myself, all of a sudden, I come out of it. And I can't even tell you why I came out of it. And
and
maybe just think there's something cyclical
right.
in the thing. And it reminds me of like a lot of kids, they're a lot of children, parents, their children don't talk. The children talk late.
Yeah. Right.
So
right.
they send them off to speech therapists.
Yep.
And I'm like, the speech therapists don't do anything. What do you mean? The kid's talking. I said, do you know anybody who doesn't talk?
Right.
Everybody talks, all right?
Yeah.
With or without speech therapy, all the grown-ups I know, they all talk.
Yeah. So,
I mean, except for non-verbal Asperger.
You know what I'm just saying?
What
happens is that whatever you're doing, whatever treatment, whatever somebody does at the time when you actually just kind of get better, they say, oh, I cured him. This is what cured him.
It's very difficult to be sure. With my brother, who's a very late talker. And now he's fine.
Well,
now he gets a brain.
No, but some people, my niece.
My father's a late talker, too.
Had a speech, not that she wasn't talking, but she had a certain speech issue.
Like a lisp or something.
Yes,
maybe.
It was not a lisp, but it was something like that. And she got better with speech therapy. I'm not going to condemn the whole profession. I will condemn certain professions. Well,
it's
but not
of the,
that
one of the ancient Greeks says something, you know, the doctor's job is to entertain the patient while nature cures him.
Wow.
And I think there's a lot to that, you know.
Wow.
You get better.
Yeah.
Well, I think in some, yes, my frozen shoulder got better.
Oh, it did. Yeah, there you
go. It got better, and the doctor did not entertain me. he tried to get me to get an MRI. I went online, and we know what it is. It's frozen shoulder. And an MRI, I don't feel like going into that coffin.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I didn't do it.
How long do you have to sit in those things?
I don't know, but...
Might I just interject one notion at this juncture?
Yeah, go ahead. Interject.
I did go on a different combination of meds around the time, within 8 weeks of feeling better. It was it was a reasonable thing, but
it could
I
be the
also,
meds.
At about the same time as the meds started to work, I felt... just well enough to start exercising, to eat right, started to spend more time with people. So I feel like
it was a feedback loop.
It was a nice
push. Yeah, a feedback loop. But,
yeah.
But maybe the medicine gets you to a point where you can absorb some of these other things.
You know, you hear about famous people in history, and the term they always use is they had bouts of depression.
Melancholy.
Yeah, but bouts. Meaning
right,
that,
bouts,
that it was cyclical for them.
Yeah,
it wasn't like Lincoln was depressed for 30 years straight.
Right.
He went in and out of it without any meds.
Yeah.
So, you know, this seems to be the way it works, but meds do work wonders for
I will say that this was unprecedented, my two years, 9 months. It was in my life. I had had bouts.
Yeah.
And I had always come out of them, but this one
Do you
was...
attribute it to anything that happened in your life?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I worked really hard for 3 years on a special, and it didn't go as well as I wanted it to. And
that could do it.
And that wasn't it. I didn't fall off the deep end, but that was sort of the inciting incident.
Next time Amy Kopelman's giving you advice, might you mention, hey, maybe if your husband put me in Billions?
Well, this is interesting. While I was feeling terrible, I auditioned for Billions, and
yes.
Brian was like, you were shaking and so anxious that
well,
right
into
couldn't...
the script.
Yeah.
Change the script. Are you my friend or not?
Any character I auditioned for, you just have to make him gay. I can't change my voice. I don't know how to do it.
Is that a speech therapy thing?
No, in my head I sound like, yeah, but I listen back and it's gay as the day is long.
But wasn't there a, didn't they do
and
a
there's
documentary
gay voice in every language.
The,
yeah, my voice is gay for 40 minutes. But
okay.
And there's gay voice in every language. Like in Italy, when I go visit my family, gay, same thing.
Let me hear it.
Allora, che io non posso capire che l'altro giorno questo ragazzo mi ha detto che lui, and it's like, why do we all do that? Like click tribes would have a lisp. I don't get it. We all just have this gayness
Is there
to
any
us.
Answer? Is there a...
No, you just, we're always like a little effeminate. My older brother's also gay, so my dad's real proud. But, he doesn't sound it. You know what I mean?
Okay.
He's very like, hey. But then my friend Jess, like I'm somewhere in the middle because my friend Jesse, he's the kind of gay is completely bald but still like wipes away hair that's not there. And he really sounds like Julia Childs. Like, girls, bonjour. Like
wow.
Mrs. Garrett, Julia Childs. Yeah, but it's just the way he talks.
But then we have our comedian magician friend who sounds gay.
He's gay.
And we're like, but he's not. He's a prolific womanizer, I thought.
Well,
Gary.
He's
we're
allowed
talking,
to say whatever he...
We're talking, of course,
she's
about...
She
gay,
can say whatever she wants.
We're talking about Harrison Greenbaum, who's been a guest on this show, and we've challenged him on this show. We've said, look, we think you're gay. And he says,
"That's so mean."
But I don't. Why
is that mean? What's wrong with that?
It's only mean if it bothers him. Does it bother?
No, he doesn't.
Well,
he loves
it doesn't
the
seem to bother.
Gays love the attention.
I mean, don't get me started. But you know, he has a joke where he says, "Like my nickname in high school is a faggot." So he's also inviting people to ask him, "Like, are you gay?" As a gay man, I'm gonna just say whatever he claims himself to be, I support it.
Now,
but,
this is a good. I just something I wanted to get into. A good.
I remark about the whole gay thing because, you know, everything. So this is what's so fascinating to me because I actually had thought about this very thing just a few days ago, how all over the world, in every culture, even in cultures where you're not allowed to be gay, there's a certain commonality of kind of characteristics that gay people have.
Yeah.
So clearly this is something, whatever the provenance of homosexuality is, whether it's genetic or something in the womb or whatever it is, you're born that way. And this is associated with that. This is a biological phenomenon. The mannerism is all of it, right? I mean, nobody taught it to you.
Sure.
And liberals really feel strongly, and I agree actually, that, you know, it's that this, we're born, gays are born this way, and it's not, and anyone who doesn't understand that is some kind of, you know, barbarian. On the other hand, if you tell them, you know, and women also are born, and the things that make women feminine and all these things that we associate with women, you know, that's not the way they're raised either. That's how women are. No, that's something totally different. That's society. That's the patriarchal society. It's ridiculous. You can't have it both ways.
But what? Well, I guess what I would say is that I think even when someone says they're gay, right? Like, I'm gay and you're straight. I think humans tend to want to categorize things because it helps us understand that thing. And so, you know, me saying I'm gay is maybe the closest thing I can say to express how I feel for another man. And anything else that comes with that, my mannerisms, I think a lot of it too, being gay, you know, everyone has their gender roles they sort of fall into. Like, up until fourth grade, I was fine. Then fifth grade, everyone really started moving in to their gender roles. And because of my natural sensibilities, and I was more accepted by girls than boys from an early age, maybe I was more inclined to, my mannerisms fell in with them, maybe more.
Yeah, but not in Saudi Arabia.
No, but you know what, though? It's like, it's still illegal to be gay in, I think, 72 countries. And, you know, I think there's a million reasons why gay men are effeminate.
Why would all over the world? You said it, there's gay voice all over the world.
Oh, yeah. I'm also generalizing.
What is that? Why is it so hard for people to accept that just like the urge to sleep with the same sex, mm-hmm. you're born, why couldn't that, whatever it is that you describe, a certain bouquet of characteristics on a continuum, not everybody has them, you know, also be part of the structure of it? Go ahead, Gary.
I had a question or maybe a comment. I have you heard of that book, Bad Feminist, Roxane Gay?
No.
She was really interesting. She was quoting somebody, I can't remember who she was quoting, but the person said, gender is a performance. And that really resonated to me.
What especially, does it mean?
Well, I think for me it meant that when I was growing up, there was kind of a narrow definition of manhood. There weren't, you weren't accepted if you were a Harrison Greenbaum. We call it, yeah, we would call
it's
you
toxic
gay and
masculinity.
Yes,
it's
toxic
the worship
masculinity.
Of masculinity.
And so I wasn't gay, but I was very creative and sensitive and quick to cry. But I suppressed all that and was lucky enough that I was a big person who excelled in sports and could fit in with these guys and was respected by these guys. But inside, I didn't really connect with that level of masculinity, I didn't fit in there. Yes,
I would.
That's
say,
in us too.
Yes,
I actually believe that's. It's just.
Yeah, I think it can be both. I don't think it has to be so black and white. I think that I mean, the reason why the feminine and the masculine are, so. I mean, it makes up a lot of our society is because obviously from way back when those were traits that manifested themselves into somehow women wearing dresses and men wear pants. I mean, something as simple as that, right? Or women should be effeminate, men should be masculine, and who knows what those reasons come from. But there is also, I think, a lot of straight men, like you're talking about, I think are also suffering. I came here to be funny, and here I am. But straight men are suffering from this idea of being masculine too, where it's like, you know, being masculine, essentially the definition is don't be a woman. So from the get-go, if you're any type of woman, you're already put down. So
yes.
For a young boy, don't cry like a girl.
Yes.
Don't play like a girl. Don't run like a girl. The idea
don't
put
throw
into
like a girl.
Don't
that's
throw
a big,
like
right.
a girl. Yeah. The idea in the head is girls,
that's a documentary.
Girls equal bad, and that being a man is good, and that showing weakness shows that you are a girl, and we remember girls are bad. So, you know, it's a message instilled in us at a young age to fear the effeminate if you are a man, and so men are playing up probably their masculinity because they're being rewarded for it.
Yes, the performance. I was performing and wearing a costume, building up my muscles like a man.
There's something to that, I suppose.
And there was something to my and I was probably ashamed of my being having Jewish stereotypical traits of being passive and
but also he wore a sundress to preschool.
But also, well, too, like the idea that a man, the fact that a man wears pants and a woman wears a dress, why couldn't you wear a dress? That's a made up thing. Man made that up.
I'm not going to talk about men wearing pants. That I have no idea. But I think that just like in most animals anyway, in the animal kingdom, there's behavior traits of the male and the female.
Flamingos aren't
in the species. And I think humans are the same way. Let's take another example. Can you say bull dyke anymore? What's the polite term for a?
You can say whatever you want.
A butch woman?
A butch woman, yeah.
Okay. Are there like really butch women who are straight? Very unusual, right?
I think it's unusual, but I think it's very possible.
Everything exists. So why is that? Like why do these things go together with such frequency?
I don't know.
Is it so hard to accept? Probably because the underlying reason is common to everybody or to most people.
Or maybe it's just part of the evolution towards androgyny.
Maybe. Yeah. I think as society moves forward, we are becoming a lot more androgynous. And I think men are, if we really look at men today versus even 15 years ago, they're doing a lot more things that are considered quote unquote effeminate than in previous years. But it's happening so slowly. And I think it's a good thing. I think people should honestly just be whatever you are, whatever makes you comfortable.
Of course.
I hope
nothing I'm saying is...
I don't think you're saying that at all. No, people should be who they are.
But that would have been such bad advice as recently as 1989.
Up until 2000... Yeah. Whenever. I mean, listen, even the fact that I'm gay doing comedy is rare in a lot of cases.
I was listening to Dice... the other night because he went off on the guy who runs comedy at Netflix, and I was listening to the because he wouldn't give him a Netflix special, and so I listened to the first Dice album, and it is so dated because of his take on homosexuals. It's so
Eddie Murphy too.
So vile.
I want to name my album. The first track of his album is Faggots, and the second one's Faggots Revisited. So whenever I make my album, I want to call it Faggots Revisited.
Oh, that's great.
I think it'd be
that's
so
great. A great homage.
How could they not give Dice a Netflix special? What are they doing?
Well, you should read this screed by Dice. It's great, except that is as brilliant as he is, he doesn't understand the then.
Oh.
And it undermines the entire screed.
And he's a Jew. And it's not even a matter of like they're negotiating for price. They don't even want him.
Yeah.
That I don't know.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Maybe
it was a Monique situation.
Okay. Roseanne Barr.
Roseanne, we have to get to Roseanne. It's the biggest biggest comedy news of the week. Well, first we need to outline what happened. Now, for those of you who don't know, she compared this woman, Valerie Jarrett.
Valerie Jarrett, the president's attorney or something?
I'm not sure who she is, but she said by a tweet that Valerie Jarrett looks like the cross between
Muslim Brotherhood and
Planet of the Apes.
And Planet of the Apes had a baby, which is my biggest problem with this, is the hackiness of that formula. The had a baby formula This is supposed to be someone who's on the...
Hacky before it was written.
She would be on the woman comic Mount Rushmore, and she's using the had a baby?
I don't think that
Jay Davis was using in 2004?
Well...
Jay
Davis aside, I don't think Roseanne Barr was ever known as a brilliant joke writer. If you listen
goddess.
Was considered cutting edge and a paradigm shift in woman comedy.
Back when, to be famous as a comic, you needed 10 mediocre minutes.
Give me a little more Roseanne. That was
so
great,
I'm
that
fat,
domestic
I
goddess.
I thought I'd point that out. You know the difference between fat people and skinny people? Like, you ask for directions. A skinny person says, you go down this street, you take a right, you do that. Fat person says, it's by that chocolate brown building next to the McDonald's.
Yay! Good night, everybody.
Oh my god.
That was great, Mateo.
So anyway,
I do a great Joe Mackey.
Can you talk about the colors like that? Go ahead. I was a Roseanne joke.
Split second, I was like, red and blue? I really was so confused.
No, because she's obviously...
So obviously, comparing a woman of color as Valerie Jarrett is, albeit light-skinned...
Another hack joke.
Yes. I'm not saying Roseanne's a brilliant joke writer, and I don't think she ever
was.
Okay,
so let's get to the heart of it. So she says something.
I think she had 15 okay minutes and became a and got a sitcom.
You know, you guys, can we just...
But the point is...
I want to digress 1 second. Yeah. You always confuse somebody who was a stand-up comic, with their career as a comic actor or actress.
I'm not confusing it. I'm saying she was a good comic actress, and her stand-up was okay.
Oh, you said that. Okay, go ahead. Okay, go ahead.
I'm not confusing it at all.
Okay.
Gary said she's one of the Mount Rushmores of female comedy, and I just disagree with that.
Go ahead, go ahead.
Even though she's famous.
Right. That's a good point.
But obviously comparing a black woman with an ape is obviously a no-go zone. And because of that racist tweet, they canceled her show, the Roseanne reboot, and I believe she lost her agents and her managers. And she was on a podcast, I think it was Joe Rogan, and her excuse was, well, first of all, she apologized profusely, and she said that she had been on Ambien as well at the time. Now, I don't know, but I did a little research into Ambien. This shit can fuck you up. You can be on Ambien, and apparently you can get in your car.
Did you see what Ambien said?
Drive 10 miles. Yeah, I did see Ambien tweeted.
Ambien's statement was, one of our side effects is not include racism.
Yeah, and you know what?
Which is really funny that Ambien.
Really funny.
Hey, Ambien. What was the name of the company? The drug company. I think it was like...
Pfizer or something?
No, it was like Sofer.
Sandoz.
No, it wasn't Sandoz.
I don't know.
Whatever it was,
drug companies that have made things I've tried and failed.
My advice to them is, get out of the snark business and worry about your medication.
So now we're going after the drug company? What happened to Roseanne?
Why is a drug company tweeting snark?
The snark business does not pay as well.
It is funny.
Yeah, but I don't want certain people to be funny. My drug makers, my doctors, and my pilots.
Yeah, but that was a great moment.
Job
funny
they
couldn't resist.
At hand. And your fucking medication has some fucked up side effects.
I really love how passionate you are.
I am passionate about this because...
Are you defending Roseanne?
I'm defending I'm lambasting the drug company.
Oh, okay.
Because
I will defend Roseanne.
Okay.
And ooh. I might defend Roseanne.
But the point is,
if a drug can make you get in your car, drive 20 miles, come home, and not remember a thing, then
you had
who
a good
the
night.
Hell knows what it can do?
I can talk to you about drugs.
This would be
Liza. Let's get right to Noam because
Noam always has a good take.
This would be my defense of Roseanne. I am not defending making jokes about black people
resembling
apes. But what that does tell me is that there's something mentally wrong that went on here with her. Because whether you feel that way or not, if you're thinking normal person, you know what the rules are,
right.
And you have a and you don't
right.
tweet yeah. that. You only right. do something yeah. so stunningly self-destructive if there's something mentally not clicking with you. And normally when somebody does something which we regard as a result of some sort of mental problem, some sort of Tourette's or whatever it is, she can say anything under the sun, we have some try to understand at least to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah.
Right.
However, when you tweet something, if the Tourette's leads to saying something racist, we want to presume that that's insight into your bad character.
Right. Tourette's usually, they don't borrow a hackneyed formula. It's sort of a reflex.
Typically, they're not that creative either.
Yeah. No, but obviously, no matter how racist she is, obviously, if she didn't know
that was going to be
something was not operating inside her. Something was wrong there.
Well, because she's lost the ability to manage, self-manage. And I think, too,
I have some insight. I'm sorry.
Yeah, sure. Of course.
For years, she's been tweeting racist and
what has
conspiracy
she?
Yeah,
theories.
She's compared
yes.
other people
yes.
to apes. Black people
for years.
To apes.
And not
was that the first time
she wasn't
no.
she hadn't been
I watched,
marginalized.
I watched
she was actually she was actually rewarded for it. She got her show back on the air when her career was sort of languishing
she
for
was,
a while.
She used to own a macadamia nut farm on Hawaii.
Wait, go.
So she wasn't reprimanded for it. In fact, she was given a TV show, and the show was getting great ratings. And she probably thought, hey, this formula has worked before, let me.
How could she think it's okay to tweet about looking like Planet of the Apes? How could
she claimed she thought the woman was a white woman, This woman is very light-skinned, and that she simply felt that she, I guess, resembled one of the characters in Planet of the Apes.
Wow, that's interesting. If she was
really
a white woman.
If she believed that, then...
Yeah, then that
well,
was
she
a,
has said
that. But she does have like that hair kind of like...
But let me ask you this question that comes up with...
That particular... Actress.
I think ABC did the right thing because obviously if this is her mental state, she needs help and she should not be in the public eye because it's not going to be serving her or anybody else around her. So maybe it was a good thing that ABC canceled her. Not maybe, it was. And so that she can get healthy and do what she needs to do and also not offend anybody because the backlash would have been even worse if
they
kept it
on. What about this? What about the fact, we're all guilty of this, but we should learn from it. That it's so much of it depends on whose ox is gored. Roseanne famously was singing the national anthem 20 years ago and she grabbed her crotch.
Yeah.
And to people who cared about that,
sure.
That was her racism, you know, just insulting the national anthem. Yet people defended her and because they kind of agreed with her politics. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of the same toxic personality showing itself by comparing Valerie Jarrett to Planet of the Apes as grabbing your crotch when you're choosing to sing the national anthem in a sporting event.
I will say the apes in Planet of the Apes, these were no ordinary apes. they were smarter than the humans.
Oh my God.
Now that's a subtlety I don't think that she would do well to advance in her defense. I make that point.
And normally I think they shouldn't fire people, but clearly they had to fire her. They had to fire her.
Yeah, it would have been awful for ABC, and she said a stupid thing. I mean, listen, in today's day and age...
It's stunning what she said.
It is shockingly stupid.
But if she thought she was a white...
Staggeringly.
Is it possible she really thought it was a white
marvelous.
Woman?
Astonishing.
But again...
She could have thought it was a white
people,
woman.
I've heard on Ambien...
No, she knew very well.
I've heard on Ambien people walk out naked. I mean, I heard you could really, really mess
you up. My wife did that on Valium. We were walking the apartment... This very building, and she was upstairs ahead of me, and I got up like a few steps behind her. She was stark naked in the middle of the building.
Oh,
but then she still didn't say anything
screaming
racist.
The N-word. No. Yeah.
Well, the question is
you know, let me finish, Mateo.
The question is...
I'm sorry, I should have waited. I saw it coming.
The question is, and we have another guest we'll get to very quickly, but the question is do drugs, and this I was arguing online about this, do drugs, and I don't have the answer, but drugs, some say, okay, maybe Roseanne would not have said this if she were not on Ambien, theoretically, but uh-huh. she meant it. So in other words, can drugs make you say and think things you wouldn't otherwise say and think?
Yeah, that's
or,
the same
or
thing
can
with
is it
Mel
just
Gibson.
Is alcohol a truth serum, or can it change your thinking and make you irrational, incoherent?
Well, I think that, you know, that's a very dicey question because I think that... It could be that jokes such as comparing somebody looking like Planet of the Apes, like Rondell Sheridan used to do a joke about looking like McGill the Gorilla.
Yes, he did.
Dear God.
These things may come to a perfectly okay person's mind, and they know not to say such a joke because part of it is not that the joke should never cross your mind or might not be funny. It's just that given history, you just don't make those kind of jokes. So maybe Ambien might allow somebody to say that out loud without really showing, meaning that they hate black people.
In other words, you can...
I mean, if you look at Valerie Jarrett, you know, and you want to make fun of her, whatever comes to your mind doesn't mean you're a racist, you know, especially if you think she's...
So your point is, and I think I agree with it, is that that joke can cross your mind without you being racist.
Yeah. Listen, if a white person can remind you of somebody, a simian... A black person can remind you of somebody. It's possible.
But I think the problem is
but
that
you,
black
you don't
people
say it out loud.
And also that black people being compared to apes has been that narrative has been
history.
Going on for a long
that's
time.
What, it's too painful. That's you should know better.
She should. And no one's even talking about why she even mentioned the Muslim Brotherhood. Like, what's that have to do? Like,
because that's an Obama thing. Yeah, that's because she hates Obama.
Anyway,
and Muslims.
We have
a
you did a dumb thing.
This has been a great discussion, but we do have a guest who has some interesting things to say.
And I'm so mad I have to leave in like 10 minutes.
Okay, I have her intro right here. It is... Stephen... Okay. Leah Palmieri. Did I say it right?
Leah.
Yeah.
Palmieri.
Leah Palmieri.
One of your people.
Is a senior producer. Is a senior producer for the website Decider and author of the recent article... Stand-up specials should avoid politics and stay personal instead.
That's
welcome.
Now, you may not get universal agreement on that, but that is your position with regard to stand-up specials.
I want to see you.
Correct. And so, I don't expect everyone to agree by any means.
But let's hear your...
Don't back down and don't be scared.
Oh, I don't. I fully stand by it, but I
understand. You stand up by it, just a pun, sorry.
Yes,
first of all, if you have any thoughts about Roseanne, now's the time.
No, we went over her. Yeah. Let's go, okay, let's do this.
I thought she had anything new to
I
say
know,
with regard to it.
I want to get into this. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So defend that position that you have, that Noam has just articulated.
You're a liberal or a conservative?
I'm a liberal.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Is that surprising?
No, not surprising or not surprising.
And I don't want this to be specifically about, you know, I don't want to hear a Trump joke anymore, but that is a part of it. And, you know, I just realized the comedy specials that I was gravitating towards were ones that weren't going near politics, that were staying pretty, they were either going very personal or universal, and they weren't making jokes that, you know, if I want to watch this special again in a month or in a year, all of it is still going to be funny, and it's not going to be like, oh gosh, we've already heard that joke 10 other times. And, you know, I just think if you want political jokes in 2018, there are plenty of places to get those, more than enough places. And so I'm looking for something that's a little bit more inventive, that's going to make me laugh, that's going to make me forget about politics because I'm sick of hearing about it. So. Well,
she was very. Did you read the article? She's very impressed with
Ali
Wong's labial humor.
I am because you
I
know
love
what?
Allie.
And I love Ali because that is the kind of thing that I pretty much texted all of my female friends and was like, "There is something in here for you. No matter who you voted for, that's relatable and that's fun."
Right, but I think.
But do any of your friends object to the language?
Yes.
Big
time. Yes.
See that's another. Yes. That's another.
They object to the language Ali used.
Yeah, you know, not everybody, you know, is in for blowjob jokes. I get that. I get that a little bit. Some of it can be raunchy. But I think that, you know, especially there's a solid first half of that special that is about, you know, being a woman, giving birth, dealing with husbands, you know, that whole work-life balance thing that is so relatable. And she made jokes about it that I'd never heard before. And so I appreciated that. And I'm not the kind of person, I find it to be very lazy if you are a woman and you get on stage and you say, my period. Like, unless you're saying something that I've never heard about it before, that makes me laugh. And so Ali, I think, is somebody that is bringing a different voice to females and the female experience. And I really enjoy that.
But is your problem with political jokes that you've heard them before? Because certainly there's non-political jokes that you've heard before.
So that can't be
the issue, because one could do an original political joke that you haven't heard, just as one could do an original period joke that you haven't heard.
That is very true. I look forward to all of those. But
so why aren't political jokes why are they less valid in your mind, assuming they're original? Trying to be like William F. Buzz. You're not the only one.
That was very good, Dan.
That was terrific. And you're leaning on your left arm. He would lean on his right arm.
Was he a righty, or is that to do with it?
I have 10 minutes. I hate so much that I have to go.
Oh, Mateo.
I know. I don't want to go. All right.
Well,
but
can Liza at least stay?
Listen, I just want to say, as someone who's been performing for a really long time, I've broken my knee.
Liza. I read the article, and I thought to myself, here's the thing. As a gay person doing comedy, sometimes innately, even if I'm not talking about gay rights, I am being political, because being gay and not having equal rights for
so long. The personal is political.
Sure.
Exactly. Personal is political. Also, too, I think if you look at art throughout history, art has used politics to make statements to help open and broaden the minds of those who aren't able to be, who didn't have those types of things accessible to them.
Sure.
And so I think too, like what you were saying, is when you were watching some comedians and you thought, oh, it's too much this and too much that, and I just, you know, the fact that there is so much variety, in a way you contradicted yourself in the article by saying there's too much political humor, but then you went on about John Mulaney and Ali Wong, and so you gave examples of comics who are giving you what you're looking for, which may not be for somebody else. So I think, and it's also weird to try and limit, I think,
just go easy on her, Mateo.
You're making all valid points. I'm totally
stand
open.
Up for yourself, lady.
I respect. I have
counterpoints,
of
for
course,
sure.
And listen, that's your opinion. But I think it's strange too to try and, trying to stop someone from speaking their mind or their point of view. And sometimes it is political. And listen, I'm the same way. Like, I watch the news sometimes and I think, you know what? It's just too much today.
Yeah.
And then I can go watch the British Bake Off, which I fucking love that show.
Okay, but why do you watch that?
I mean, I think
because
it's
you had too much politics, and so that's my point that I'm
no,
making.
But I didn't say it's too much politics. I think you need variety in life. I mean, I don't. I love playing video games. I love sex. I love doing comedy. I love drawing. I love opera. But I don't do all those all the time. So I think within anything, it's not just about, you know, oh, it's too much for me. I mean, I could have too much Maria Callas for me in one day.
You
know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that. Where I'm coming from is there is too much politics for me. It's on Twitter. It's on the news. It's on, you know, you go to a dinner party. Like, it is, I've never talked about politics like this, like we do in 2018. And so if I'm going to open up my Netflix or I'm going to sit down, I want to laugh. And sometimes even the best Trump joke just reminds me. And it's like, I don't want to hear that. Like, that is just, I don't want to hear anything about it.
Do you feel like, in a way, you're trying to censor artists from speaking their mind?
No,
because
not
you
at
personally
all.
Don't like what they're saying?
Well, she's
no, not at all. I just avoid them. Like, and even if they agree with me and where I'm coming from, I still don't want to hear it. I want something that's completely different that makes me happy and laugh.
But don't you think you've solved the problem then by just turning off Twitter? Or who you follow?
No, I don't feel like if I go a day and I don't look at Twitter, I still know what all the news of the day is.
Uh-huh.
So
well,
how do
you,
I
are
escape
you making
that?
A broader point? Are you saying that people who are doing stand-up comedy, political-centric stand-up hours are not successful? They're not getting a wide audience? People are not enjoying them?
No, but I think they find their audience for sure. And I think they're, you know,
so
again.
So would you have their audience denied that?
No, I think that...
So then I don't get it then.
I think that it's the people that want political jokes, obviously we need humor more than ever. We do need political jokes. I don't want them in stand-up specials because the Roseanne thing is a perfect example. Within an hour, all the news had changed, all the tweets had changed, all the jokes had changed, all the information had changed. It was already stale. So if you are taping a special and it goes up on Netflix, even 3 months, which I think is a pretty quick way to turn your special around.
Sure.
Already, if you're going to put political things in there, you better be saying something I have never heard. And that means you've never gone on a late night show and done it. You've never tweeted it. Like, it has to be something really original and really special. And it's sort of, by the time your special is getting to Netflix, that political joke is old news. The news cycle is moving
too quickly.
But labia
will always be labia.
I agree
labia,
with...
It will. It really
labias
will.
Labias are evergreen.
I agree with that. I'm sorry I'm talking so much.
No,
I have a set in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But I agree with that in the sense of, like, I don't do a lot of political humor because to me, one, it's so changing so quickly. Mm-hmm. It's not something that I can latch onto and grow with. And two, the joke's been made.
Yeah.
So when you do make a joke about politics, it has to be pretty unique.
Yeah.
But I real quick, the other thing too, I think, is that I think it's interesting too, like, you know, if you want to get real, however, about this, there are people who are in a less privileged position from you, whether it's the color of their skin or their sexuality, et cetera, et cetera.
Don't you have a show to do, Mateo?
Sure. I do. And and you know what? They have a real backlash from what's happening in politics and need that catharsis in order to express themselves. And so they use humor as a way to express themselves and the struggle that they're not just dealing with, but maybe members of their community. And so I think it's a weird position to take for you to tell someone, censor yourself because I don't like it.
To be fair to Leah, she's not saying, she's just saying what she thinks is the best kind of stand-up special in her opinion.
No, but there is something
she's
peculiar.
Not trying to censor you and saying you can't do it. She's saying the recipe in her mind for a successful stand-up special
well,
is
that,
as follows.
But she acknowledged that, but that there are specials that don't follow us that are successful.
Well,
that's what I don't get.
Right.
The
right.
thing that I want to say to you, too, is that, you know, if you want to make it about your personal experience, that is amazing. Make it personal. Like, you know, I don't know if you have direct Trump stories that you want to talk about, but how.
We went out to lunch once.
Sure, okay. How that is affecting your life.
I blew him.
Well, did he spank you?
Know, that
it was rough.
I have not heard that joke.
I do agree that people tend to hit a lot of the same topics with regard to Trump, with regard to. With regard to the gun violence, which is another big issue, and I do hear a lot of the same jokes, but at the same time, you hear a lot of the same jokes with regard to other topics, you know. So, you know,
let's get off charade for a second.
hackery can exist in political humor, it can exist in In non-political humor as well.
When Ellen came out of the closet, if you watch her Oprah interview, most of the audience at that time said, I don't want to turn on the TV and see lesbians. It's disgusting. It's too much. I just want to. So, you know, there is this kind of, I think anytime something as big as Trump is happening right now and so much that's really getting fucked up in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. you know, there's a shift. And the people who take on that shift to express it, to give it sort of a catharsis for the audience as typically artists.
I do agree, but I agree with that point. But there's a lot of dumb.
But I agree. I agree with you in the sense of like I've heard this joke.
Yeah.
You
know Gary.
I'm sorry, I have to leave.
Gary has
a not like.
Yeah.
No,
I appreciate your point.
Listen to Gary.
Yeah.
Listen to Gary.
Sorry, Gary.
Oh,
I love you.
It's so great to see you, and I'll see you around.
Gary's gonna. Okay.
Great job.
And Liza's going with you.
Stay in touch, Mateo.
You and Liza are never in the same room. And never.
Sitting alone in your room.
Whatever I'm trying to say.
Come to.
Or whatever.
I used to have a girlfriend known as Elsie.
I love that.
I think I have a point to make.
I
will say that before you came in, I was like, we are going to really show what's up. But your point isn't nobody should do any political humor. Your point is about specials.
Yes.
And so I'm going to partially agree with you. I think that, I don't know what percentage, but for most comedians, yes, it's topical, so it's not going to hold up after even 3 weeks, never mind 3 months. Two, you're competing. When you're doing political humor, you're competing with the writing staff of Saturday Night Live, Colbert, every single one of the John Oliver, all these great people, and the star of that show. The only thing I will say is that I want to hear in a special, I want to hear what Patton Oswalt's take is. I want to hear what David Cross's take, John Oliver's take, and there are a number of others.
My guess is I know what their take is.
But I still want to
hear. I want to hear Noam Dorman's take.
All right. No,
even
no.
though he's not that funny, but.
On what? On
as
politics?
Stand up. But no. You bring up shit that I'm not hearing from. You know, Patton, you can always rely on Patton for fuck Trump, and you can always rely
no,
on...
No, he's sharper than that.
I don't know that he's that sharp. The
he's
points
pretty
I,
clever.
The
he's very clever.
Yeah. The points that Noam has made and makes on a regular basis, to me, are far more interesting than anything I've ever heard Mr. Patton Oswalt say,
wow,
as good a comic that as he is.
Thank you, Dan.
Well, it's true. I mean, I the know. Point that you made appreciate about, for example, that. Roseanne's joke about how you might... think of a funny joke and not necessarily in a racist way. Okay, that's a nuance that I haven't heard. And that's something I want to hear on these comedians say, not the same old, on one side we have everything, fuck Trump and everything, Trump is the devil. And on the other side, you know.
That's why Louis needs to come back.
Yeah.
Louis was the king of those kind of more subtle observations about an issue that you thought you knew both sides already.
Yeah,
I think.
When I was 18, I had an archaeology professor at Boston College who showed us a model, a statue of early man.
Uh-huh.
And he said, doesn't this look like Patrick Ewing? And at 18 years old, I was like, and not on the cutting edge of liberalism or anything. I was like, this guy's a schmuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was a professor at a pretty prominent college, and I knew... that he was wrong to say that, and
you just don't say those things.
Ugh! What are you, 6 years old?
Yeah.
And so, but getting back to the specials, I
but that
understand
doesn't mean...
from your specials, you're looking for escapism. Even if I wasn't a comedian, though, I would want some of that. I would want some Jerry Seinfeld, some John mm-hmm. Mulaney. But I always wanted to hear what Dennis Miller for a long time had to say about things, and now is. He's more rallying cries for the alt-right than he is for jokes, but he's gotten way more conservative than was in the 80s.
Well, he's a libertarian though.
But Leah's take on specials, because I'll tell you when I make a special, because I have a Trump joke that I've done downstairs and always gets a big laugh, but I wouldn't put it in the special because
why?
Because I think that people watch my shows. The fans that I've amassed over the years to escape from that,
yes,
and to hear clean comedy because they're averse to dirty comedy. I had a few Fs in my previous specials, and I was like, what did it really do? It may have upset a couple of people, and it's really not worth it. I'm Lenny Bruce all of a sudden. But you would watch a John Oliver special, wouldn't you? Knowing that he's going to talk about politics?
I will say this. I love John Oliver. I have not watched his show in probably about a year or so, I would say. Wow. Yeah, I've avoided it. I've stopped watching Samantha Bee. I love her as well.
I'm going to have to interrupt because I've become so nervous that I said the wrong thing and I decided to cut this out. Yeah. First of all, let me be very clear now. I am not defending. I think it's disgusting to compare. Actually, this happened another time and I was on the same side. So you can't, like, I don't give any quarter to somebody who vulgarly compares anybody black to an ape. That's not my point at all. My point was Dan's question. Does that mean that would the ambient do that? Whatever. You know what? This is the fucking world we live in. Why even bother discussing it? Because we all know what we have to say. It's a fucking hostage video. We're living in a hostage video, and we should all just say what we're supposed to say. There's no point. I'm serious.
You don't think this is hyperbole at all?
No. What, really?
I don't think I'm living in a hostage video.
You know, I do, because what I'm talking about here is the only interesting thing that can actually be said about it, other than the fact that, of course, it's a fucking vulgar, disgusting thing to say. Yeah. But the only like analysis you can do of it is off limits. And somebody will take the analysis as if you're defending it. I'm not defending it.
Right. You do risk being misunderstood. Well, and there's never been a bigger penalty for being misunderstood.
It's fucking ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
It's vexing.
But she should have been fired. Of course she should have been fired.
What about Leah, though?
I hope not. Well,
Leah, this is the problem. I'm going to tell you what I think you're reacting to. That's why I should be Republic, or if you were conservative liberal, because you're actually, I think, describing that you hate Trump so much you can't stand to be reminded of him because it spoils your day.
But I don't even like jokes about him, though.
Yeah, because just to remind you, it's like Esty in the Holocaust. Like, she just can't make a good Holocaust joke to Esty because...
But I always feel bad that some... And I'm not saying you know how they always say every conversation... They'll compare somebody to Hitler.
Yeah.
I'm afraid that I would have been a comedian during the Holocaust who did, hey, how about this Wiener Schnitzel? Being an observational comedian in Germany during that time and never bringing up the Führer. And I'd look back and be like, I let my people down. I let the world down. Trump is on a spectrum somewhere between...
But my point was what I don't like about
that's an interesting point, by the way.
What I don't like about political humor, and this is what I thought where I thought you might have been coming from, but I guess it's not, is that this politics is a particular subject matter where the person, for the most part, delivering the jokes, is trying to be preachy. Nine times out of ten, it's preachy, or
claptrap,
and quite often the subtext is putting down the people on the other side of whatever issue. Aren't they idiots? Aren't they rubes? Whatever it is. So I don't find any of that pleasant. Mm. So that's why I don't like political humor on either side, really. But from time to time, when somebody truly is funny, they're funny. And then I don't care what the subject matter is. Yeah. But it's a subtext. And what they're like, they have something to prove, a lot of political comedians. And what they want to really prove quite often is how much smarter they are than you.
Right. Yeah.
I don't like that.
Yeah. I also just think, like, you know, we're just grappling for things to find that we have in common with people that voted differently from us. And if one of those is a joke or a special, like, isn't that just beautiful? I know that sounds a little bit hippie-ish, but, like, I would love to have that in common with somebody and say, we both have this same sense of humor. I don't know why we differ politically, but I'm glad we both enjoy this.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What a world. What a world.
A crazy world.
I mean, you know, if they compared, if they mistook a Jew for, I don't know, what, a ferret. Yeah. I mean,
well, yes.
Oh, a weasel.
A weasel. A weasel or a rat.
Or a rat.
I wouldn't blame Google.
A weasel or a rat.
No, I wouldn't blame Google either. But if I wasn't Jewish, I would be over the top in condemning it.
No, of course. Of course.
But if anybody said, I heard a comedian comparing, and I won't mention any names, but I did hear a comedian once say about a Jewish comedian that he had a rat face.
Oof.
This was a non-Jewish comedian that said about a Jewish comedian that he had a rat face. I won't mention any names, God forbid.
Did he have a rat? This is the question.
But did he have a rat face?
That's my point, Dan.
and Google.
How? How?
A slightly ratted, non-completely unrat-esque.
Do we know?
I'm not. I will not under torture. Even if you give me an Ambien, I will not reveal.
Has that
this information.
Has that comedian ever won my? You know about my awards show for
that's a great talk. Horrifically, well, with this.
Horrifically stereotypical portrayals of Jews in cinema and television. The Kaikis. Did this comedian ever win a Kaiki?
He might have been nominated. I think I think in Variety, it said for your consideration. But anyhow, that's very, very sensitive stuff, obviously.
And rightfully so.
And I was upset that this comedian had said this about this other comedian, but I'm like, I don't think he meant it anti-Semitically. I think he was just making a comment that struck me as horrifying, okay?
Do we believe Roseanne?
What do you make of all this, Leah Palmieri?
I know what you're going to say about this, but I'm like, why do we keep being so mean about people's appearances? Like,
I agree with you about that too.
You know, like I think that's
so right.
I think it's much more fair ground to comment on somebody's,
unless it's Sarah Huckabee Sanders, in which case it's perfectly okay.
Well,
oh well.
I don't think that was about Sarah Huckabee's appearance.
It wasn't.
Yeah,
well.
Yes, it was. It was.
You're saying
it was.
That we should. What is fair ground to make fun of?
People's intelligence or their willingness to.
Let me tell you about it. Intelligence is equally as out of our hands, I think, as is looks. Yeah.
Their willingness to learn.
Okay.
I think
right.
is. I think is.
Look,
is
I submit that it's all out of our hands.
Maybe.
I
yeah.
submit
more than exactly. intelligence. Yeah.
I don't believe in free exactly. will, so I submit it's all out of our hands.
All right, what are we cutting out
of
this episode?
But that is fine philosophical point.
Certainly, you're kvetching about how Vegas is doing.
Can we really trust you to cut this out? You're not quite of color, but you have sympathy for that part of the world. Can I trust you to?
Look, we got into some very, very
can we trust
touchy
you?
Stuff, and we
my,
didn't
listen. My wife's of color. Okay, my children are a certain part. You know, this is how you guys actually sound desperate.
Oh yeah.
My children are 1/32nd Native American. Did you know that? Just like Elizabeth Warren.
I didn't know that. Yep. We call her Pocahontas.
That is very good. We got to go. We got to wrap it up.
Okay.
Listen, Gary, I want Lou to cut in one of your bits that's already been released. Has the state abbreviations been released publicly?
Sure. 7 million views on Facebook.
Okay. So Stephen, can you just, all that interesting, subtle analysis, just cut it all out. And put Gary's interesting, subtle state abbreviation bit, which is, I think, genius.
It's one of your favorites.
Genius.
and it is the example of a bit that, though it is not speaking truth to power.
No.
It is speaking abbreviations to postal codes.
I think it's a okay. an incisive commentary on bureaucracy.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
and neoliberalism.
Good night, everybody.
So the preface is this. It's a movie about the men and one woman who abbreviated all 50 states down to 2 letters. If you're too young or you don't remember, there was a time in this country where every state had its own abbreviation. It was chaos. Massachusetts was M-A-S-S period. New York was N-Y. But like Utah was Utah. They just dropped the H. But then in like 1973, the post office said, no, this can't be anymore. We need uniformity. Every state must have a 2-capital-letter abbreviation. So they brought together a crack squad of abbreviators. They assembled a ragtag outfit of rogues, misfits, and ne'er-do-wells. How often do well? Ne'er. Nair? Oh no, Nair. They ne'er did well. And these brave men and one woman were charged with abbreviating all 50 states down to 2 letters. Now I read the description and I thought to myself, how are they going to make a 98-minute documentary about a task that couldn't have taken more than 6 minutes to complete? Boy, was I wrong. It was an adventure every bit as compelling as Helvetica. A tour de force, ups and downs, ins and outs, friends became enemies. Enemies became friends. They started off, they thought it was going to be easy. Oh, no. I said, what's the first one? Alabama. A-L. Oh, my God, this is easy. we're going to be finished before they stop serving breakfast in the hotel restaurant, which was 9:30. It's too early. And the boss said, guys, if we finish before they stop serving breakfast, breakfast is on me. And one of the guys said, oh, I hope they have an omelet station. Just for context, the omelet station had just been invented, and understandably, it was sweeping the nation. This guy was thrilled. He's like, oh, I hope they have an omelet station. And this other guy said, you know what? I'm not comfortable with the omelet station. I just feel like the omelet chef resents you. You know, because he didn't want to be the omelet chef. He wanted to be the chef. And now he's making like the easiest dish while you and your ugly wife and your stupid kids are watching him, demanding he put more ham cubes into a Denver omelet that's already busting with cheese. And you get turkey bacon, now it's healthy? No. I think one day he's going to snap, and I don't want to be there when it happens. And they said, well, then just get Eggs Benedict. Well, I don't like holiday sauce. Did you just say holiday sauce? It's hollandaise, you fucking moron. And the boss said, guys, can we get back to revisiting the states? We still have 49 left. And apologies were made and an understanding was reached. And they went back to abbreviating. I said, what's next? Alaska. Everybody cool with AL? But somebody caught it. Sir, I think we might have used that one before. Are you sure? Pretty sure. Well, let's just check the minutes. Dottie! Dottie, read the minutes back to us. Dottie was the wisecracking secretary. Every 1970s office had a wisecracking secretary, and 60% of them were named Dottie. The other 40, Carol. But this one was Dottie, and she was a card. A pistol, a hot ticket. Oh, Dottie was sassy. And they said, Dottie, read the minutes back to us. And said, this is so Dottie. How Dottie is this? She goes, you mean the minute? That is quintessential Dottie. That is Dottie in a nutshell. I said, oh, Dottie, what are we going to do with you? Spank my ass and make me a martini? Oh, Dottie. Dottie, you're incorrigible. Now read the minutes back to us, you little vixen. And she said, it's hollandaise, you fucking moron. Et tu, Dottie, et tu. How do you know Shakespeare, but you don't know hollandaise? That is a paradox. Anyhow, Alaska, AL, Alabama, yeah, we did that, use that one before, boss. The boss said, God, he was a leader. You got to give him credit for this. He was a leader. He said, guys, not a big deal. We'll come back to it. We'll go ahead. We'll circle back around. We'll get it. It's not going to happen again. It's certainly not going to happen 27 more times. Foreshadowing. So what's the next one? Arizona. AR. Boom. I told you. Next. Arkansas. Shit. All right. I'm sorry, guys. I got to let that. All right. All right. Let's just keep going. We'll come back to it. California, CA. All right. There we go. Colorado, CO. Some momentum. Connecticut. Fuck me hard. Somebody needs a drink. Not now, Dottie. You vulgar lush. By the time they got to Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, followed by Michigan, Minnesota, Mississippi, and Missouri, shots were fired. They were at each other's throats. They did what any savvy business would do. They hired a consultant. They brought in a contractor. Not a contractor, a contractor. A man who made words smaller by combining them or apostrophizing them. And he was the best. He was very respected in that field. He was very well known because he had done some of the greatest abbreviations of all times. He wrote O'Clock. Many years ago, we would say it's 9 of the clock, it's 10 of the clock. This man said, we don't need the f. I'll do that with a sky comma. That's how long ago it was. The apostrophe hadn't been named yet. He also wrote Bleed At. Huge in some communities. But he was not without controversy. He also wrote the most controversial abbreviation of all time. He wrote won't. People said, how are you going to abbreviate will not and not use a single L? And he said, watch me. What are you saying? I won't be able to do it. I just did. Can't. Never tell me I can't. Motherfucker, I invented can't. Long story short, they made it on time for breakfast.